Not a ton of show for you this week. We are cut off early again. Mitch will have Jabroni of the Week. Fortunately, I do feel like we have to talk K-State basketball. It's going to be a long rest of the Big 12 season here. We are going to do our damnedest to find ways to keep it entertaining and keep it fun as much as we possibly can, but it is not much fun right now. And the excuses really are running out for these types of performances. I'm not merely talking about losing, but losing by 26 to Oklahoma, middle of the pack Big 12 team. Team that did not receive a single vote in the top 25 last week. This is no longer the roster that played against Oklahoma State, where there were, in Bruce Weber's words, 5.5 scholarship players available. K-State last night had 10. There were 10 scholarship players available last night. That hasn't happened in over a month. Casey Eziegu is back. Luke Kasubke is now available to play. There legitimately are bodies. Arguably, the most important one was not out there in Nigel Pack, but that is not a 26-point difference. That is not the difference right now between K-State being competitive and K-State not being competitive and losing Big 12 games by an average of 18 points per game. And right now being in the midst of what would rank as the worst two-year stretch in K-State basketball since the 1940s. Worse than Jim Wolders' first 2 years. And that's where my frustration is with the program right now. There have been a lot, I'll start it like this. There's been a lot of slack granted and extended by me, first and foremost, and others. But for the team in this season and where it was going and where it was always likely to be headed, because the roster was so young and COVID and so on and so forth. But I did not think that it would play out this poorly. I thought they would lose quite a few games, but I did not think it would look like this. Losing by 26 to a team that will probably make the tournament, but a team that was 7-4. I mean, Oklahoma was 7-4. It's not like, again, this was Baylor or Texas. And you just watch the game, and it doesn't look like a team that really belongs on the same floor as Oklahoma. And, you're getting – I understand why they're doing this. This is not a criticism of the broadcast, but I would say that you're getting this almost patronizing commentary from Brendan Manzer, and I don't know who the play-by-play guy was. But you're getting that from them trying to craft the narrative and spin it like, hey, COVID and injuries and all this, and, you know, these guys are going to be good, and I think Nigel Pack's going to be a stud, and – It feels somewhat patronizing when you're hearing that. And it's like, it would be one thing if that's a broadcast where you're getting drubbed by Kansas or you're getting drubbed by Baylor, but it's like, man, this is watching us play Oklahoma. Like, Oklahoma? And we have to hear that from the broadcast about, like, where things are at? We can hear the excuse that you can make every excuse in the book for where things are at this year with this team, but it should not be this bad. It should not be this bad. And can you recover from things being this bad? The further and further this goes, the more and more doubt that I do have. We're talking about a season in which Fort Hays State loss still exists. That happened, got whipped at home by Fort Hays State. You've lost a game by 31. You've lost a game by 26. There have been one-point wins over, who was that, like Omaha? Was Omaha the one where they had to hit a last-second three to win the game? I mean, it's just nothing about this year outside of the Iowa State game, nothing about this year has been fun.
Yes, John, you're right, and that is also happens to be K-State's last win.
Oh, okay.
Which was back on December 29th. So K-State Perfect. Still hasn't won a game in the year 2021.
The four-point win against Kansas City. I mean, I don't know, man. It feels like, even the team that was out there last night should be better than the sum of what its parts wound up being. Like, Davion Bradford, Shelton Miguel, at least that there, I mean, should be enough. Like, Mike McGurl, if he is not just in a total slump, which he apparently is right now, like, you throw together some of those guys, it's not like they're all terrible players. It feels like you should be able to do more than put up 50 points against Oklahoma. And that's a part of why I continue to say I'm getting more and more doubt about the ability to turn this thing around long term, because it just doesn't seem like they're responding right now. And we got the quote from Bruce Weber after the game about how it feels like it's the same thing happening over and over again.
Obviously, we got our butts kicked again. We just, it's the same scenario every game. You know, we're in the game. We make a nice run. We're up 22-17. And then right before the half, we do not make the right plays.
It is the same thing. It is happening over and over again, and it continues to happen as the roster gets healthier and healthier. The arrow is pointing fast, downward. So I'm just not in a very good place with it right now. Don't feel good about anything that's happening there. A lot of the optimism that I had for a brief fleeting moment there about Davion Bradford and Nigel Pack has been replaced and surrounded by more negativity with this right now.
I'm right there in the same boat with you. We are using the same excuses over and over when trying to defend K-State men's basketball. And I'm always optimistic. I always feel, you know, there's always a chance this can be turned around. It maybe just takes one game. It just takes maybe one game to spark a team and they have the confidence back and they can get going. But you look at the schedule, K-State's 5-10, and you scratch your head, when can K-State win another game? Who can they maybe sneak by down the schedule? And you think, well, we beat Iowa State. Maybe we could get them when they reschedule the home game. But the optimism when you look at the schedule and knowing how tough the Big 12 is, it's really hard to be optimistic about victories. I mean, it'd be just great if K-State could lose by 5 instead of getting just completely blown out, even though it does feel K-State plays better when they're on their own floor and they'll play West Virginia. But the thing is, the common excuse has been COVID and not having players at practice, being down Nigel Pack right now. But everybody in the country is obviously dealing with the same pandemic. But K-State hasn't had it as bad as most other schools, really. Look at it. Because the Big 12 is such a mess right now. 3 games of the midweek, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, there were supposed to be 2 games tonight. They've both been postponed. And there was one other one. But that's 6 out of the 10 teams that can't play right now because, not all 6, but some of them have had to postpone because of COVID issues. They don't have the numbers to go out there and play. I think K-State has, for the most part, handled COVID much more better than most of the other programs.
Well, 7 of the 15 games that were scheduled to be played last week didn't happen. West Virginia, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, they've all dealt with being hit very, very hard by this. As I said last night, Oklahoma is playing Brady Manek, but he only played 11 minutes, and it was only 7 that were really consequential before the game got, like, totally out of hand. I mean, he just clearly wasn't himself, and he was somebody that had been out and was returning from COVID. So, well, it's almost a wash. Like, with Nigel Pack, I realized Pack didn't play at all, but they had an absolute shell of Manek, and Manek is one of the better players in the league. Certainly one of the 2 best players on Oklahoma's roster. And Texas, we didn't make very much of it during that game because it was just like, oh, it's Texas, they're a top 5 team, they'll work K-State. But they were missing 2 players who may be in the NBA, and they were missing 2 very key rotational pieces. They had less available scholarship players than K-State did. And it just feels like there's still kind of a residual effect of the injuries and COVID, and like, we're going to carry that into these games, even though now you have a full complement of players. It's pretty depressing. It's pretty depressing where things are at right now, and no matter what answers are there, whether or not you think it is going to be this current coaching staff or whether or not you think it is going to be making a change at the end of the year, it doesn't feel like anything is all that close. Now, this is also not 1989 K-State football, where it's going to take a genius in 5 years to build you back up to what you think you should be. It's not like that, but it's, I mean, after enduring what this year is and what last year was, it's going to be a while before it seems like things are going to get markedly better than that.
K-State has had to miss one game due to COVID. They've done a great job. Great job. I think they've realized the message that you got to take this very seriously. And Coach said it about Nigel Pack, that he's more aware of why you wear the mask, and he tries to wear it as much as possible when he's out in public or even around the guys when they're not practicing. So I appreciate that part. But even Bruce Weber, this whole segment is about, we've used all the excuses up. It's now just numb and frustrating. But Bruce Weber said it all himself as well. I typically listen to all of his post games with Wyatt and Stan, and he's just as repetitive. You can hear it in his voice. He's just as frustrated. He has had to make every excuse in the book as well, because everything is piled up. And when you lose 6 conference games in a row, there's obviously a trend, and everything is falling into that pile.
6 conference games in a row, with only one of those being a game that you legitimately stood a chance to win. And even that, with TCU, was having to fight and scrawl and fight and claw and scratch. There we go. Your way back into it at the end. Mitch, make me laugh with some jabronis coming up next.
Take me out to the ball game.
And then everyone said jabroni.
You jabronis hit the jackpot.
That jabroni you have sitting in your studio.
Ow.
Is this jabroni's name?
Jabroni of the week.
It's Wednesday. You know what that means. It means it's time for some jabronis. Served up specifically for John.
It's usually not on Wednesday, though.
It is usually during the high school basketball season and college basketball season, though, because Tuesdays get a little bit busy.
I think you're confusing people, though. You know, this is supposed to be appointment radio. You can't tell them it's Wednesday. You know what that means. I mean, this is like Pavlov's dog. They're trained to the bell on Tuesday.
It's going to get changed back to Tuesday. It's Tuesday. You know what that means once we get back to Tuesday, jabronis. But for right now, it's on Wednesdays.
Okay, so when is Jabroni of the Week?
Wednesday.
I'm just kidding. Proceed.
Okay. All right, 3 dishonorable mentions. We'll culminate with Jabroni of the Week. My first dishonorable mention, I got to give a shout to those who bet on Baylor to cover the 8.5, because Monday night, one of the just gut-wrenching bad beats you'll see in sports betting, because on Monday night, 9th-ranked Kansas, they were an 8.5-point dog to 2nd-ranked Baylor, and they were down 11 points with 2 seconds left, 1.9 to be exact, and Kansas guard Chris Tien, who is from Leawood, never plays, just knocks in a 40-foot three-pointer at the buzzer, a meaningless three. KU covers, and everybody who bet on Baylor lost their money. That's just sick.
Well, was it worse than anybody who bet on Texas to cover the number against K-State?
Yeah, because I'm sure not as many people bet on that.
Well, I mean, okay. But think about it, Mitch. The guy who is betting on Texas K-State is going to be more of a degenerate than the guy betting on Baylor in Kansas.
Yeah, so
there
the
would
money
be more casual. So, but I'm saying,
wouldn't be as much.
No. You need to feel for that guy, because it probably was more. It's the degenerate guy that's like trying to, you know, make up for what he spent on the credit card at Christmas. Like, that's who you need to feel bad for there.
I mean, this is a top 10 game. Big money, I'm sure, was on this contest, and a lot of people lost a good chunk of dough.
Well, I feel worse for the K-State Texas better. The better that had Texas covering and got beat by a Petrakis layup, a walk-on layup.
Screw them for taking Texas. My next dishonorable mention is Tennessee head coach Jeremy Pruitt, who was canned yesterday for potential recruiting violations within the program. Not only did these violations surface, but he led the Vols to a 3-7 season after potentially cheating to bring recruits in. Now, the reason I throw him in here is because I just thought it was funny how he potentially got caught for these violations. And this was from the Dan Patrick Show. And Dan Patrick said yesterday that he heard from a source that his staff, when recruits would come visit, would hand them a McDonald's bag full of money.
Wait, that was on the Dan Patrick Show?
That was on the Dan Patrick
Show.
Shout out
to DP. What a scoop.
That was a big scoop, no doubt about that. So that's a big, probably a big reason why he got caught.
It's funny you say that because I heard somebody today on another show that I was listening to say, oh, you know, he's just handing his recruits bags of money. And I thought that was like, you know, just hyperbole. Nope, literally bags of money.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope they put it in the little apple pie container, you know, like the little the boxy thing that goes around the apple pie.
Yeah.
I hope that's where the money was stuffed.
My last dishonorable mention, it's not sports, but I got to throw it in there, is Joe Exotic from Tiger King. So he was
– this poor guy.
He was desperately wanting a pardon from Donald Trump in his last day, full day in office. And, and Trump did, live up to the promise where it was reported he was going to pardon a whole bunch of people, most of them being supporters or people that had worked for him. Some were even arrested for things – on behalf of President Trump, but the Tiger King, he had written Donald Trump many times about getting out, but he's serving a 22-year sentence for his murder for hire plot against Carol Baskin. It was to the point his family and his supporters basically rented a limo so they could bring him home in the limo once he was pardoned.
Yeah, no, that's the bad part. Like, you got the limo? Come on, man.
Well, the jabroni part is Trump did not pardon Joe Exotic, and now it's too late.
Well, you can't get the people. You cannot put that kind of juju out there in the world.
But finally, my jabroni of the week, it has to go to New York Mets general manager Jared Porter.
This guy surfaced, is just disgusting.
Surfaced just recently, but it was 5 years ago where he was sending dirty pictures, unsolicited dirty pictures, to a foreign female reporter. And it got to the point where he was so desperate. This is the true jabroni part, not only the unsolicited pics, but he is such a creeper that he sent 62 consecutive unanswered texts between July 19th and August 10th of 2016 with no response. She finally turned him in because she was worried for her career that if she did it while she was a reporter, she would lose her job.
Well, yeah, she left journalism.
Yeah, she did.
Of this.
That's why and that's why she finally had the courage to turn him in, and that's why he is no longer a general manager.
It's terrible. I wish I could remember the reporter's name to give you the specific story here, but a female reporter from The Athletic, I forget who she covered. I want to say like Washington, somewhere in Washington, but did a whole story about that, how she was covering the Orioles at one point and some of the stuff that female reporters have to deal with, man. It's awful, and that guy is a jabroni and a half.